Here we go again. The Yankees brass making promises to his fans about being aggressive and spending money in free agency on top-tier free agents. We've been through this already. The New York Jets losing it to Miami Dolphins. Does this make the New York Jets the worst team? Are we being too harsh on a New York Knicks? One of our faithful listeners seem to think so. And Kyrie Irving already causing issues in the Brooklyn Nets organization. Let's get the damn show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. That erupt, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants are Jets, Yankees are Mets, Knicks are Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
ALB! And please pardon my fresh as we bring you all new episodes of Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, November 4th, 2019, and this show airs every Monday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, TuneIn, Google Play, Pocket Cast. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing. And listeners, please continue to spread the news about this wonderful talk show we have going on here. Me and Mad Mike are also on social media. Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram. Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter. L-L-O-Y-D. Be sure to follow. You can shoot questions through there. Sometimes I have conversations with our listeners when they have questions or thoughts. So please feel free to hit us up on there. You can also shoot us questions through email to lloyd@partnerfresh.com or directly to the website. As always, listeners, we have another great show for you today. There's always so much to talk about. We're going to talk about the New York Yankees, as the owner of the New York Yankees is spewing out that garbage again about spending money. Here we go with this again. We're going to talk the New York Knicks. Again, as one of our listeners seem to think that we're a little bit harsh on this team, and this team has been competitive. We're going to touch up on that as well. We're going to talk some Brooklyn Nets. Is Kyrie Irving already wearing out his welcome in Brooklyn? And we're going to talk some New York Jets football, as this team has hit rock bottom by falling to Miami Dolphins. And they also swung a trade with the New York Giants. Who's the winner of that deal? Did it make sense for the Jets? Did it make sense for the Giants? Or did it not make any sense at all? So it's always listeners. Let's buckle up, sit back and relax, and start spreading the news. Hey, yo, let's get it.
How sweet it is. It's Monday. That means the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show is back. Let's go.
As always, we gotta find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. Yo, Mad Mike, where you at today, baby?
Lloyd, I'm actually on the road. I'm coming back from Tampa, visiting some folks. So, you know, getting back in the swing of it. I know we have a new World Series champion. I'm happy to see it.
Happy to see it as well. Although we both said we wanted the Nationals to win, but thought that Houston would pull it out. Either way, it was a good series. We saw some great pitching. And on a day when we really should be ripping the New York Jets, Mad Mike, we're going to start off talking some New York Knicks. And the reason why we're going to start off talking some New York Knicks is because we have one of our faithful listeners who reached out to me through social media, and he felt that we was being a little too harsh on this basketball team, Mad Mike, as he feels that they're playing competitive basketball. Okay, and although the Knicks might be playing competitive basketball, listeners, they're not winning games. And part of the biggest reason why they're not winning games is coaching, player rotation. You're the coach. Okay, you get this team to orchestrate and play the way you want them to play. And how many times, Mad Mike, and listeners, after games, have we seen Fizdale say, oh, we stopped moving the ball? Well, if the team stopped moving the ball, isn't it your job to call a timeout, get Nate ASS apostrophe S or ES or whatever, how the heck you want to spell it, and say, let's get this popping? What are y'all doing? Yeah, well, if you can't get on my page, you're not going to be on the court?
Well, I'll tell you this. I had a listener reach out to me as well, and his exact words were, maybe I'm wrong here, but starting Portis over Mitchell Robinson because you need to space the floor better is an indictment on the coach. He's looking to space the floor to create more ISO opportunities for his players off the dribble. I'm sorry. Once again, like you and that's a listener reaching out to me. So there, you're telling us, the coach, like you just mentioned, ball movement is a problem, but you're starting Portis over Mitchell Robinson. So you're doing two things. One, you're giving up rebounds and defense, right? Two, you're prioritizing ISO basketball. So when you want to know what, by the way, this veteran lineup that he keeps starting with, it's not working. The Knicks are digging early holes, and they got to get out of it, and then put in the same veteran starting lineup, close games, and the Knicks are being putrid. Did you watch the Orlando game? I did. It was 82-81.
Every single game this year.
It was 82-81. 82-81 with 8 minutes and 4 seconds left in the game. The New York Knicks scored 3 more points for the entire game. 4 more points for the entire game. I don't want to hear about ball movement. I'm tired of hearing about it. His lineups are not—they're not passing the ball. The veteran lineups, and they're not playing defense. They're not playing enough defense.
The only person that is playing defense is Frank Ntilikina, who's on the court because the Knicks' 2 starting point guards are injured.
Yeah, but you want to know what, Lloyd? And it's something
I don't know if Dennis Smith Jr. I don't know if he had a loss in his family. And they excused him, but neither one of those guys are on the court, which is why the Knicks are playing Frank Ntilikina. And mind you, listeners and Mike, Matt Mike, RJ Barrett is playing point guard.
Yeah, so I'm going to touch on Frank. Frank on Friday night versus the Celtics, he played great. He probably played one of his best games as a Knick. You know why? One, he got the start. Two, like you just mentioned, he knows that he can play free because there's no quick hook. He knows that I hate to say it, but David Fizdale is forced to believe in him. And he knows that. And you saw how he responded. He gave him 12, 6 and 2, 12, 6 and 3, 3 steals and a block, a chase down block at that, sending a message to everybody else that, hey, we're here to play. We're going to hustle on everything. It wasn't even his turnover. And he ended up with the block from behind on Marcus Smart. So I'm just saying that it's funny how all of a sudden, once the pressure alleviates, the kind of player he showed us that he can be. Now, is he going to be fine consistency? We'll see. But we saw a little bit of that on Friday.
Listeners,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. Listeners, when I said that this team was going to make the playoffs, I said that, and I truly felt that this team was going to make the playoffs, because I feel that the Knicks have talent. They have enough talent on this team, and the Eastern Conference is weak enough for this team to make the playoffs. Again, I will repeat myself, listeners. This team has enough talent to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, and because the Eastern Conference is so weak. The reason why this team is not playing solid basketball is strictly because of coaching. And I also said that this is going to be the telltale year for Fizdale because he can't make any excuses about not having talent. He doesn't have any G League talent on this team right now, listeners. None.
No.
Every player on his roster is a serviceable NBA player.
Thing that you mentioned RJ Barrett playing point guard. And I know off the air. As a matter of fact, on the air, why don't you tell the fans what you think of Julius Randle?
Oh, man.
Because it's going to lead me to Julius Randle and RJ Barrett. I've seen similarities, but I want you to bring up your point first.
I just want to say, Julius Randle, I was watching the Celtics game. Listen, I watched every game thus far, the New York Knicks, and Julius Randle post-game interaction with the media was very interesting to me, all right? Frustrating as mountain because of all the double teams, and Fizdale is saying he's getting frustrated because of the double teams, and his face is so far, and plus he added responsibilities of being a point forward and bringing up the ball, yada, 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 yada. This is a $63 million player that the Knicks decided to give money to. This is also a player, listeners, that has played out of control basketball his entire career. And the only reason why, I don't know if you're paying attention to it, but I am, is we're seeing it because we're Knicks fans, and this is the team that we get to see. We're seeing it more so now. Mad Mike, I think, I don't know if it was Mark Stein or somebody tweeted out on their Twitter page about Fizdale saying that Julius Randle was frustrated about the double teams and triple teams. Well, guess what my answer is to that? Play under control and let the game come to you. Why in the hell are you out on the perimeter shooting three-pointers? You're not, newsflash, you're not a three-point shooter. Why are you trying to dribble past three and four defenders? Another stat for your brains, listeners. He turns the ball over four times a game. What is that saying? If he's turning the ball over four-plus times a game, he is playing out of control. I see him try to dribble past two guys, three guys. He doesn't pass the ball to the open man sometimes. It's not going to work. Yeah. That's not going to work.
No, and you're not wrong. And you're not wrong. But here's why I'm going to tell you that I don't think that this is a Julius Randle problem. I think that Julius Randle is frustrated. But I think it's easy, and Alan Hahn made this point, and this is why I'm also going to bring it up about R.J. Barrett. His ability to handle the ball, his ability to stretch the floor and shoot the long two-pointer or even a three-pointer, right? He's not a power. He's not a point forward, and he's not a three-point shooter. I will give you that. You know what? R.J. Barrett has the ability to handle the ball. He outside of John Morant, he actually graded out as the best college passer in this draft. So we know that he has above average court vision. So the reason I'm bringing all this up is these are the things that make these guys special, right? These are the things that they're not. You can't call Julius Randle a traditional power forward in the sense that he can only back you down. He's only going to score from the 18 feet. And et cetera, right? But here's the thing, and I'll credit Alan Hahn with this because he brought it up after the Orlando Magic game. If you ask these guys to do it 50, 60, 70% of the time, it's no longer what makes them special. You understand what I'm saying? Now it's the norm. And if you make him a full-time point guard when he's on a court, now you're getting under, it's less than average. You know what I mean? You're getting less than ideal production out of that position on the court. So really what you should be doing, once again, like we said, point guard is a position for a reason. Go find, they should have found themselves a point guard. Somebody that we kept saying and saying and saying was D'Angelo Russell. They should have got themselves a guy like D'Angelo Russell to go with this group of guys. And now all of a sudden, if you have D'Angelo Russell or anybody, I don't even want to just throw his name out there, anybody, a real point guard, now all of a sudden, all of their special talents, all the things that they do outside of being a good shooting guard and power forward, now it becomes special. Now they become special players. But you can't just say because a guy can do it, that's what he's going to be doing, because it's not his position, like you said. He's being frustrated by doubles and triple teams. Well, why is he being? Is it easy to double and triple team him, Lloyd? Because they know he's gonna bring the ball up. They know that he's gonna catch the ball out 5 feet off the 3-point line to set up the offense. It's easy when you know it's coming. But if you say, "Hey, you know what? I only need you to do this 30% of the time," it transforms your offense. It's stupid, yo. It's. I'm telling you, man, it's bad coaching, and I don't care what anybody tells.
He said that he has, Matt Mike, he's still, to me, he's still a player who game suits him because he's so strong inside the paint. To me, that suits him. That's his style of play, inside the paint. He's talented enough where he can stretch the floor, but if you get a double team, kick the ball out, get the ball back in a better position. If they collapse down on you again, kick the ball out. That's basketball 101. And you are right. Maybe it's not Julius Randle's fault. Okay? It's Fizdale. If that's the case, then it's Fizdale's fault. Because as a coach, If you know the type of player that you have on your roster and the talent and what skill set this player has, don't you make him perform up to that skill set and say, slow down a little bit, kid. Slow down a little bit. You're moving way too fast. When I watch him play, Mad Mike, he's moving way too fast. When I watch him play, listeners, he's moving way too fast. Slow it down. It'll come to you. It'll come to you.
Yeah.
How many analysts have we seen say that Julius Randle has the potential to be an all-star this year? Nobody said he has a terrible game. To me, he's playing out of control. And he's playing out of control on you know, when he was with New Orleans, but he had Anthony Davis. You know, the Knicks don't have no other star on his team right now. So maybe he feels the pressure to be that player, but he's not that type of player. Listen, it's Julius Randle is not that type of player. The Knicks do not have that type of player on the team. So they have to play team basketball. They don't have one player that can take over a basketball game. That's facts. They don't. Not one player that can take over basketball during a game during maybe Marcus Morris. You know, but he's not that type of player. We can see
yeah,
him
but, you
take
know, not
every
for
game.
Nothing, man. Not for nothing. Not for nothing. Do these guys know when? Because the other night, Marcus Morris and Wayne Ellington, two veterans, went 3-for-19 in Orlando. 3-for-19, brother. 3-for-19.
And that's
veterans.
Exactly, that's the point that I'm making, listeners.
Or keeping guys like Kevin Knox on the bench.
And Alonzo.
Listen, I don't even know if Damian Dotson has. Yeah, has Damian Dotson played any minutes this entire season?
Yeah, Fizdale, he won't even explain. He won't even explain why Alonzo Trez is what he's done to receive a third straight DMP. Three. And he was one of your best players last year. Is Wayne Ellington? Let me ask you this, listeners and Matt Mike. Does Wayne Ellington have a future with this team? Does Elfrid Payton have a future with this team? These guys are probably going to be gone. And the one player that you have control over that's going to be here, he's getting DMPs? If he's playing out of control basketball, you are the damn coach. You make him play your style of basketball. You make him play control basketball. And you make him fit in the system.
But at the same time, Lori, even if he is playing out of control basketball, I'm talking about Alonzo Trier, what message does it send to him that you put him on the bench, but you keep starting Julius Randle? If you came into this season and you said everything has to be earned, just because you're a first round draft pick doesn't mean that you're going to get minutes, then what message are you sending him? Kevin Knox, Alonzo Trier, when they look at these other guys that are not closing, Wayne Ellington, who, let's be fair, he's not shooting the ball well, and he's only here for his shooting. He's not playing defense well. He's doing absolutely nothing well, but he constantly gets on the court. Constantly.
I'm really scratching my head, man, and the sad part about it is, you know, we talk about Adam Gase and the job with the Jets, and he needs to go. And this is Fizdale's second year. My whole thing is, what has he done? And I was an advocate for Fizdale. Listeners, I even talked Matt Mike into accepting Fizdale as a coach.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? I predicted this team to make the playoffs this year. And now after looking, that's the reason why one of our faithful listeners is like, yo, you know, like, don't you think you've been a little bit too harsh because you're already writing them off after 4 or 5 games? But I know what I see from this team. And yes, again, listeners, this team has the talent to be a playoff basketball team in the Eastern Conference. But if the coaching is not propelling them to play up to their potential, they're not going to make that. This is why this team only has one win. This is why, in a one win, they should have lost that game.
Well, this was always, and I said it last week. I said it when they hired him. I keep saying it. I'm going to say it again. this is what happens when a GM and a president go into a coaching search and they don't necessarily know exactly what it is that they're looking for. So me and you were president and GM of the New York Knicks. We're going into to a coaching search. We're checking boxes, right? We're saying we're going in. We're looking at somebody that can develop a good rapport with Kristaps Porzingis. We're looking for a guy who is notable, you know, who notably has developed a player of note. And I'm not talking about a guy like Mike Conley Jr. because he was already established in this league, right? So someone who's built a culture, someone that identifies with the New York fan base. There's a lot of things when you're hiring a coach in New York specifically that you should be looking for. I don't think that they had any of those boxes. I don't think that he checked any of those boxes, nor do I think that they were concerned with any of that. I think they went into this yet again and they said, who's the best candidate that I can use to attract free agents? Who's somebody that identifies with these players in free agency? Not the players in the draft, not the players on my roster. And I think you're seeing now what happens when you get that wrong. Because we did the same thing with Mike D'Antoni. And I know everyone keeps saying, get over it already. They didn't hire Mark Jackson. This is why we're dealing with this. Mark Jackson developed a culture. He developed players. We say whatever the hell we want, man. If you want to ignore it, then you ignore it. But like all the complaints, man, you have, everything that you've seen is coaching.
So and that point exactly. And listeners and P, who's the name of our listener who brought this to my attention. Look at that aspect of this team. Don't look at the players. I mean, obviously, we got to look at the players to a certain extent, but pay more attention to the coaching. Pay more attention to the player rotations. Pay more attention to when players make mistakes, how they're not yanked off the court for making mistakes. You can have all the talent in the world, in any sport, all the talent in the world, but that does not equal championships. It doesn't equal wins. You got to have you don't have to have a great coach, but you have to have a solid coach in place. That helps a great deal. It does. It really does. And if you don't have a solid coach, then it doesn't matter how much. Well, you know what? I can't say that because look at the Golden State Warriors. They won championships because of the players they had on the court. And we can say that about some other coaches. And look how Steve Kerr is struggling now when he doesn't have the Kevin Durant and the Andre Iguodala's and those guys.
He's got a lot to prove too, right? And it's the John Gruden effect. Remember, Tony Dungy he helped draft and develop that Tampa Bay Super Bowl winning team, and they went to John Gruden to take him over. And then John Gruden at the end, remember when it was time to restart, he couldn't restart. He didn't. They just kept losing, and he had to get fired. Well, now that's where Steve Kerr's in. That's exactly the role Steve Kerr's in. You came in and transformed a team that had already built a culture through another man. Can you rebuild that culture? Are you that coach? He might not be. We know, you know what I mean? He just might not be. We know Phil Jackson wasn't that coach. We know Phil wasn't going anywhere that didn't have superstars that you know, can keep him at the top.
Yeah, listen, man. I'm pretty sure this is going to go on and on, this talk, and we're going to have fans. Please feel free to continue to chime in on social media at us. We'll always respond to you on social media, so please keep that coming. You know, and this is, like I said, right now, this isn't a bad basketball team. It's a poorly coached basketball team. Big difference. Big difference. Huge difference. Before we move on to Kyrie Irving, man, Mike, let's just... We talk about coaching. Who let San Antonio go on an 18-0 run without calling a timeout? You know what I'm saying? Like, who, if Frank Ntilikina is your best defender, why don't you have him on Jason Tatum? Why is RJ Barrett on him? If you know that Jason Tatum is one of their closeout guys, don't you put your best defender on their best closeout guy?
Yeah, but you see, that's the issue I have, Lloyd. And it's something that I hope there are times where, and I've been extremely impressed with RJ Barrett, but there are times where I feel like he's being forced down our throats. And what I mean when I say that is his greatness, his superstarness, the way Pete Carroll threw from the goal line instead of handing off to Marshawn Lynch because they were forcing the superstardom of Russell Wilson on us, right? That's what I feel like is happening now. Logic tells us that Frank Ntilikina, especially, that was one of his better games, dude. Not only that, but you gotta understand something. His wingspan, Frank Ntilikina's, is the same as Kevin Durant. Jason Tatum, do you know what he has to go through to get a ball over Kevin Durant's outstretched arms to get a shot up? These are things. If these are things that I'm paying attention to, these are things the coach should know. He's your best perimeter defender, and he's got the longest reach on the team. If someone is going to stick to the perimeter to get a jump shot off, why the hell wouldn't you put Frank on that guy?
Agreed.
Especially when you lost a week ago on the same exact play with RJ defending the perimeter on a step back three by Kyrie. The same exact thing happened. That tells me I'm not putting this on RJ. Either they're trying to make RJ the star with his, you know, he got the defensive stop or whatever, or it's a coach that's not learning from his own mistakes.
And there you have it. Listeners, think about what we're telling you right now. Just think about what we're telling you. And then Matt Mike brought out the Orlando game. That's another game that the Knicks were in control and should have won. We're talking about easily this team can have 3 or 4 wins right now. And they don't. And that's because of the coaching thus far. And I don't see that.
But you know, not for nothing. I put a lot of blame on him, but I do put a lot of blame on Scott Perry, man. This is Scott Perry's MO. It's actually something that ruined the locker room in Sacramento. And if you look at it, Sacramento actually got away from that this past season or mid-year last year or, you know, 2 years ago or whatever it was. He believes the way to develop young kids is through veteran leadership. And I don't believe in that. And Larry Brown struggled with that. You know, this is where he learned how to, Larry Brown is who taught him how to you know, build teams and Joe Dumars, right? Well, remember something, Larry Brown is the guy, and we brought this up on the show, that refused to play LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, you know, and all those young kids in the Olympics when they didn't even medal. Remember that. So he really thinks it's just fundamental different. We just have different beliefs. I don't believe that you develop kids by bringing on veterans that are going to get the bulk of the minutes.
And only
because
in
the end of the day,
he's not even fully committed to these dudes. So, you know, as much as I've been an advocate for Scott Perry, it makes sense because, listen, at some point, the Knicks have to hit a home run and sign a top-tier free agent. And if they don't, then they have to stop praying that this is going to happen.
But here's the other thing, Lloyd. I'll give you another example. And this is why I love Kenny Atkinson. Kenny Atkinson and the Nets, they've taken a lot of flameouts, a lot of first round flameouts, and they've developed them, and they've turned into to players for the Nets. The Knicks have made the conscious effort of signing the Mario Hezonjas, the Noah Vonleys, and what guy is stuck? What guy has turned into a star, developed into that guy? Has anybody? No. What's the point guard's name? The Allen Iverson? Trey Burke, right? Trey Burke regressed last year under David Fizdale. He got worse.
Yeah.
He got worse.
Again,
so you tell me.
We're gonna touch up on this. We're gonna touch up on this again. I want you to listen and think about what me and Mad Mike are saying to you right now, listeners. Food for thought. But before we go to a commercial break, Mad Mike, let's talk about Kyrie Irving and the Brooklyn Nets. As the Brooklyn Nets lost to the lowly Detroit Pistons, the same Detroit Pistons that didn't have Blake Griffin, that didn't have Derrick Rose, that didn't have what's the other point guard they have? I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Reggie Jackson.
Yes, Reggie Jackson. So they was playing against a depleted Detroit Pistons team and lost. Okay, then you have Kyrie Irving, who's, you know, supposedly going through these mood swings where they took a team picture. He was wearing a hat. He told the organization, I'm going to wear the hat. If you don't like me wearing a hat, then you know, just kind of... you know, mark it off, use the computer to mark it off so it's showing as me not wearing a hat.
But like I said, Lord,
they should have moved it just as what they were getting when they signed him.
If you gave them truth serum,
I will say that much. He is playing solid basketball.
If you gave them truth serum, all that entire front office, coaching staff, to a man, if you gave them truth serum, they'd all tell you that Kevin Durant would have came here without Kyrie Irving. They would have signed somebody else and kept D'Angelo Russell. I'm telling you, we all know that. So, yeah, he's a problem. But you want to know what? He also understands that they can't touch him. They can't touch him because he's a savior, him and Kevin Durant. But, and they had an amazing win at home against Houston on Friday night. But just from me, that's been his whole career. Him as a leader, his teams are always going to be up and down. They're never always going to be up and consistent. Why? Because to me, he's not a real leader. Like, he demands it. He talks a good one of LeBron, but let me tell you, LeBron never took a day off, which is the only reason LeBron can demand what he demands of everybody, because he's put in the same work. And unbelievable for me to have to defend LeBron James, but, you know, that's just the facts. Yeah, it's just a fact.
He's saying he doesn't have to be perfect for no one. This is the Kyrie we know. This is the Kyrie that you know, that showed himself when he was with the Boston Celtics. I plan on being back. I plan on being here for the foreseeable future. Then he says he had no intentions on being there.
Yeah.
And it's what the Knicks have. And again, the style of Kyrie Irving plays, I don't. It's not a winning. It's not an appetite for a winning success with this current basketball team. Now, if him and Kevin Durant was on the court at the same time, yes. But him by himself, no. Not at all.
But I told you that. I told you that. And what's the difference between the Nets without Kevin Durant? What's the difference between the Nets and the Knicks? To me, the Nets are slightly better because they have Kyrie. But the Nets, to me, are no better than maybe a 41-41 type team.
Man, Mike, we say this more time. I don't care what anybody says about the Nets roster and what Kevin Durant says and what Kyrie Irving says about, you know, the Knicks have the younger talent, or the young talent on the Knicks roster, to me, is better than the young talent on the Nets roster.
When it develops, yes. The Knicks have a lot more, have a better core and a lot more pieces. And in a league where one player makes all the difference in the world. Like I said, look at LeBron James. The Cavs are a lottery team with the same exact roster minus him. They're a lottery team once you take them off. And that's what I'm saying. To me, I don't know how Kevin Durant could say that. Yeah, I'm a Knicks fan, so I'm biased. Yeah, I'll admit that. But at the same exact time, I'm telling you, if you took this exact Knicks roster and put Giannis on it, the Knicks are not for a 1-4 seed team in the East with Giannis on this roster. This exact
one superstar.
That's my point. That's my point. And that's why I don't understand.
Not a Julius Randle play away. They're a superstar away.
And that's why I don't understand Kevin Durant's comments about it. Because at the end of the day, it still matters. At the end of the day, people still, this is still a Knicks town. You heard it at the Barclays Center. And Knicks fans are not even asking for a winner right now. They're just asking for a team to not be as brutal as they've been. Give me effort, play close games, and pull some of these things out, and we'll be 100% satisfied. That's just facts. That's just not, we're not spewing. Me and Lloyd have already said. I said this could be a 35-win team. You said they could be a 40-win team. Either which way, we both think that they can be in playoff talks by, some point deep into March, maybe even early April in the East. And that's all we care about. That's all we're asking for.
Ain't that the damn truth. And with that being said, listeners, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we gotta unfortunately talk about the New York Jets as they were beaten by the Miami Dolphins. Does this make them the worst team in football? We'll give you our thoughts on that when we come back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. first half of the show, listeners. We talk some basketball. We talk some Knicks, and me and Mad Mike both feel that David Fizdale needs to go, and he's not the right man for the job, but he's proven that to us thus far, even though it's 4 or 5 games into the season. Who give a damn? Who gives a damn? Get him out of here. And we talked about Kyrie Irving, and now let's talk about some football. Listeners and Mad Mike, as the Jets hit rock bottom with a loss to the tanking Dolphins, and if it can't get any worse than this, listeners, the Jets' Sunday loss to the Dolphins, an organization that does not want to win, in my opinion, the 26-18 loss is one of the most embarrassing losses, in my opinion. Okay, my opinion. I don't know if Mad Mike feels the same way or if you listeners feel the same way in Jets history. And that is saying something with this franchise, okay? Listen to me and listen to me good, listeners. The Dolphins entered this game winless at 0-7 with the 31st ranked offense and 30th ranked defense in NFL. Yet, the Jets were worse. And put this one up next to the losses to winless Saints teams in the 1980 at Shea Stadium or winless Colts team in 1991. Both of those teams finished 1-15 with the only win coming against the Jets. And the Dolphins could finish with that same record, although they do have another game against the Jets this season. I've been bad at predicting things, listeners. I would like to think that the Jets should beat this team at MetLife Stadium. Okay, former Jet Ryan Fitzpatrick, they made this dude look like Tom Brady. He tortured the Jets. 3 touchdown passes. They couldn't get to him. They couldn't turn the ball over. They gave wide open receivers. The Jets offense drove down the field on an opening drive in the second straight week, then vanished again. Vanished again. Sam Darnold, you know, he led and ended up with throwing a 12-yard touchdown pass to Jamison Crowder. And I was like, wow, this isn't the same team that I've seen the past couple weeks. And then it happened. Then it happened. And this team is now 1-7 with no hope for the rest of the season. And it was easy to excuse, you know, the way losses went down when he was out. When it just didn't have Sam Darnold.
Well, no, but you want to know what, Lloyd? No, because I will not allow it. And I'm going to tell you why. I'm not going to allow it because I just saw the Denver Broncos play the Cleveland Browns tough with Bryce Allen, whatever his name is, as the backup quarterback. He wasn't even supposed to be the backup this year. He actually is only on the roster because Drew Stanton got hurt and is on IR right now, and Flacco's on IR. And Vic Fangio said he knows our system, and we are not going to be held back by him being that quarterback. If he couldn't run this offense, he wouldn't be on my roster. So once I heard that, I said to myself, I thought about what you just said. We had built-in excuses, right? Remember something. Sam Darnold was hurt, and this offense was lost without him. The two guys that came in that were on this roster, actually the 3 guys, because Fails, Falk, or whatever his name was, and Simeon, they all came from Miami. They all came from the Adam Gase system. So, no, there's no excuse for that. I don't care. The fact that they look like they did is an indictment on the coach, because they're not here because they can help Sam. They're here because they know his system, and if anything happens to Sam, they're supposed to be able to step in, no problem.
Yeah, I just feel the excuses are over. The Jets just lost to a team that has gotten rid of nearly every good player it had. Nearly every good player it had to secure the top pick and select a franchise quarterback. And this is a team that I said was going to make the playoffs just 2 weeks ago. Just 2 weeks ago. And listen, I said it, and I've been adamant on this. Again, I'm not going to put all this on Sam Darnold's shoulders because, like you said before, on the previous show, I don't know if it was the previous show or the show before that, he doesn't have anybody to throw the ball to. When Robbie Anderson is your best receiver, you're in trouble. He doesn't have an offensive line to protect him.
But you want to know what else, Lloyd? Robbie Anderson had 2 catches for 33 yards on Sunday. He only had 4 targets. if you're not even game planning him in, if you're not even scheming him in, which is a, and it's funny because we just watched Devontae Parker, who 4 years in the league, this is his fourth year in the league, he caught his fourth touchdown pass of the season against the Jets, which is a career high. He played for Adam Gase for his first 3 years in the league. And his complaint about Adam Gase is I'm just not part of the game plan. You're asking me to come in on Sunday knowing that I'm not even a part of the game plan. And that's what I see with Robbie Anderson.
But, I mean, you can honestly say that he doesn't have a star receiver to throw the ball to. Whether or not the Jets are incorporating him in the game plan or not,
You're right, but what I'm saying is, then why not trade him this week? Why not take the four? And let me tell you something, and you might disagree with this. I think there's more talent with Robbie Anderson than people see. And here's what I'll tell you. The two teams that tried to trade for him, one of them was Green Bay, 7-1 first-place team, looking to be in the title.
Don't get me wrong, man, Mike. I'm not saying he's not talented. What I am saying, he's not a number one receiver. And if Green Bay wanted him, he wouldn't go to Green Bay and be the number one receiver there. He wouldn't be the number one.
But what I'm saying is they see something there.
I mean, he had a really good season. What was the quarterback name before Darnold, the veteran that they had?
Josh McCown?
Yes, Josh McCown. He had a great season when Josh McCown was
quarterback. Yeah, almost had a 1,000-yard season.
Yes. So I see
but you want to know what? But here's... And that's my point. And that's exactly the point I was making, Lloyd. Who was the offensive coordinator that year? Johnny Morton. Where did that guy come from? He came from Sean Payton in New Orleans. It's a style that they're playing. The Jets are not playing a style equipped for Robbie Anderson to succeed. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Le'Veon Bell is complaining about not touching the ball. He's not getting enough touches already starting.
Yeah, but you want to know what? He's not. He touched the ball. Yesterday he got his touches, right? But they abandoned the run. They abandoned it when they got down. But if we're being 100% honest, the week before against Jacksonville, only 9 touches for Le'Veon Bell? 9 touches? That's not enough. This is a coach. This coach doesn't know what he's doing. And that's what bothers me is I have this roster. I have this game plan. We just talked about the Knicks having a game plan. I have this roster right here, Adam Gase, in your interview. How are you going to use each one of these guys? Oh, not to mention, we are going to prioritize signing Le'Veon Bell in the offseason. How would you use Le'Veon Bell if we brought him in?
And then there's reports
that sounds amazing.
You heard the reports that Pittsburgh reached back out to the Jets about training for Le'Veon Bell?
But they weren't the only one. Pittsburgh. They said even Green Bay, who has Aaron Jones, reached out to the Jets. Kansas City reached out to the Jets.
Would you trade him?
And that's my.
Would you trade him?
No, I'm telling you, I wouldn't trade anybody on this roster. I'd fire Adam Gase. I would. Something happened in that game Sunday in the Miami game to me. There's a few things that I think need to be talked about. One, nobody from Miami came with them. Think about that for a second. Every time a coach goes to a new place, does he not? Don't players go with him and help bring in, implement his new system instead of bring his message with him? Rex Ryan came there. He brought Bart Scott. You know what I mean? Like it happens all the time, and it all the time. Rex Ryan came before Jim Leonard. Like, yo, nobody came here that mattered. Anybody that mattered wanted away from this guy.
Even with your players went from Arizona to the Giants, and they're not still, correct. You know, studs, but still players followed him. And you're right.
Nobody,
that's a great point.
Nobody followed this man here. Nobody. And I think that it needs to be spoken about, man. I just do. I don't think it can be ignored any longer. Joe Rivera, you know he's a diehard Jet fan, friend of the show. You know it. Been defending Gase. Not no more. Today he was off the bandwagon. He said, "I've seen all I need to see." And you know what the nail in the coffin was? The interception by Sam Darnold. Nail in the coffin for two reasons, Lloyd. One, because Sam Darnold doesn't look like he's getting any better. Sam Darnold is regressing, right? Sam doesn't look like he... Sam was the number one rated quarterback over the final month of last season. And Sam looks more lost this year than ever before with terrible Jeremy Bates. But the thing about that play was not just that. It was the play call from the two-yard line, Lloyd. Instead of handing a ball off to Le'Veon Bell, he called a rollout to the left. Sam is a right-handed quarterback. Do you know how hard it is for a right-handed quarterback to roll left and have to throw across his body to get the ball where it's going? On top of that, he was never even able to throw across his body because Chuma Adoga gave a piss-poor effort and the blitzer went right through the line. Went right through. Sam was being wrapped up and he tried to flip the ball to get the touchdown. Yeah, he's got to be smarter and throw it away. But at the same time, I mean, yo, we can't keep, it can't be ignored, man. It just can't be ignored
anymore. There's that thing about coaching. Talent and coaching. Where coaching can, you know, it can make or break a person or a team. Being said, I'm still on board with taking Saquon Barkley over Sam Darnold. Still. And I'm not saying it because of this. Saquon Barkley has not regressed, despite me not being a fan of Schirmer, whatever the hell his name is. Generational talent. Doesn't mean that Sam Darnold can't be a generational quarterback. Doesn't mean that.
No, but I'll ask you this, Lloyd, and it's something that I just thought about yesterday watching the game. And it's something that I made mention, and one of our listeners actually shot me down, tried to take, you know, kind of took me to task for saying it. But do you think that Adam Gase needs an offensive coordinator? I know that guys, you know, these guys nowadays, it's his system. He wants to call the plays. But, you know, I think that maybe he's suffering from not having an offensive coordinator. You can't develop Sam and fix the offense all at the same time. You can't do it.
But when has he ever been a great offensive-minded coach, though, Matt Mike?
Well, look, he's considered a genius. He's got Peyton Manning's co-signing and whatever. I know what you're going to say because I say the same thing. But listen, I say the same thing. If you remove Peyton Manning from his offense, he's never ranked higher than 17th. And that was only once. He's only ranked one time above 26 as a coach. And that was when he was ranked 17 his first year in Miami. But that wasn't with his roster. It wasn't with his players. But at the same time, the reason I'm asking you this is because I was shot down. Someone was like, well, Bill Belichick calls his own defense. And Andy Reid calls his own offense. And Sean McVay calls his own offense. And I'm saying, all right, so we're going to give me four or five people over the last 10 years that have been successful in doing this. How many coaches have been recycled in this league that haven't? I'd say 8% of the coaching hires are able to handle this kind of responsibility. As a matter of fact, look at Cleveland. Freddie Kitchens isn't looking so hot anymore, right? Freddie Kitchens last year was top dog, right? Now all of a sudden, Freddie Kitchens is he's looking lost. Why? Because he's got to coach his team.
Right. We say all the time
and call his offense
all the time. Listeners, some offensive coaches and defensive coaches don't make great head coaches, and some head coaches don't make great offensive and defensive coaches. That's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah. Right, Matt, as a matter of fact, look at Mike Tomlin. Portion. Right.
What is it? 32 teams in the NFL. And a list of the name, what, four coaches out of 32?
Yeah, but think about this for a second. Mike Tomlin, special teams guy. John Harbaugh of the Ravens, special teams guy. No one's talking about that. Well, what they are, though, is great, are great leaders of men. They're great head coaches. Simply put, great head coaches. And maybe Tom Bowles called his own defense here. He was never successful here overall. It's just the facts, man. I wasn't putting anything out there that wasn't truthful. You can, for every Andy Reid, there's three coaches that couldn't handle being a head coach and calling the offense at the same time. I don't think there's anything too crazy about me saying that. I don't.
No whatsoever. But let's move on to these grades real quick, Matt Mike, before I hit you with something that's definitely going to anger you. All right? Let's talk about the offense. And for the second straight game, okay, the Jets put together a great first drive and then went to the tank. And the final statistics don't reflect how poorly this game went, in my opinion. They finished with 321 total yards, all right? But most of those were meaningless. They scored just 18 points, 16 on offense against a team that was allowing 34 points per game. Sam Darnold, 27, a 39, 260, one TD, one interception, had an 85.4 rating, had another terrible interception in the red zone, although that could have been based on the play call that Matt Mike explained. When you have a quarterback roll to the left and he's a right-handed quarterback, he has to throw across his body, and that's tough to do. Very tough to do, but at the same time, he could have also threw the ball out of bounds. All right, Le'Veon Bell, 17 rushes for 66 yards, 8 reception for 55 yards, was more involved than last week, but did not have a play longer than 14 yards. And this offense has its issues again. Again, it all falls on coaching, in me and Mad Mike's opinion. And with that being said, I'm giving him a D-minus, Mad Mike.
I gave the offense a D. I thought that there was some bright spots early on, but I guess this is more of my problem with coaching than it is with the offense, but I got to blame the offense. I just see a team that came out with a good game plan and once again stalled out as the other team makes adjustments defensively. I mean, that's what I saw. I saw an offensive line that as Miami started to stunt and make some changes in their pass rush scheme. I saw offensive line that didn't know what to do. I saw a free runner. I thought Sam Darnold died, literally died, because for some reason they shifted the protection to the left. Everybody went left, and the all-out blitz came from the right. How does that happen? When was the last time you saw an all-out blitz on the right side and everybody went left and the quarterback was a dead man?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. And to talk about just defense, all right, Dolphins quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick was 24-36. He threw for over 200 yards, 3 touchdowns. He had a quarterback rating of 118.8. He picked apart Greg Williams unit. Obviously, there's a lot of players that are injured on the defensive side of the ball. Miami went 6-for-12 on third down conversions, and the Jets barely touched Fitzpatrick all day. And the Dolphins tight end, he had 6 catches for 95 yards. He killed the Jets.
Killed the Jets. You know what's funny, man? I'll give you grade first. I'm sorry.
Right, and then I also want to say the Jets, the secondary lit receivers run open. Quarterback Darrell Roberts had 2 bad penalties. I'm giving them a D.
I gave them an F. Here's why. One, you're right. There's a lot of injuries. There's a lot of key players hurt. But at the same time, if you know look, Mike Gesicki, like who you talked about, the tight end for Miami, he had 22 catches last year as a rookie for Adam Gase. He just had 6 catches yesterday against against these guys. 6. Think about that. 6. That's a quarter of what he had for Adam Gase a year ago. That's number one. Number two, Darrell Roberts is not a starting quarterback in this league. I don't even think that I think Darrell Roberts is a practice team player, maybe a 5th or 6th cornerback on the depth chart. Why the Jets went in with him as a CB2 is beyond me. He still hasn't learned to locate the ball. So, and I don't know, once again, here's the thing. I don't know if this is coaching, if this is scheme, just players that can't get it done. What is Terrell Basham doing defending? He's playing the Blake Cashman role. What is he doing guarding tight ends? This isn't even a linebacker. This is a guy who is too big to play linebacker.
Right, and don't you adjust at some point? Like, you would figure you would put a nickel back or something like that on him. And the Jets didn't adjust to that.
Yeah, and so the only reason that I gave them a D was because you had a couple of sacks there. Early on in the game, you had you know, this defensive line looked active. They looked like they were getting after it, not necessarily getting the sacks, but, you know, knocking Fitzpatrick off the ball, off his point. So that's the only reason I gave him a D. Outside of that, this secondary is horrible.
Yeah, all right. Now let's talk about the special teams. All right, Vincent Smith breathed some life into the Jets with a 78-yard kick return just before halftime that should have led to points. And Sam Ficken went 3-for-4 on field goal attempts, including hitting a 50-plus yarder. And Arthur Mollett gave the Dolphins field position when he interfered with Dolphins' return. I'm going to give them a B-minus, man, Mike. Special teams, New York Jets, B-minus for that reason.
I gave him an F. And I was tempted to give him a D because I think that Vincent Smith return at the end of the first half, I thought that that was possibly a game changer, even though it ended up in an interception. But the reason I gave him an F is because it got strict rule, right? What's my rule? If you're missing any field goal inside of 40, I'm giving you guys an F. And at that point, the Jets were up 7-0. Basically, a chip shot field goal for Sam Ficken would have put him up 10-0, and they would have been in full control of the game. He missed it, and the game changed. Miami went down with that miss, scored a touchdown, and it was 7-7 instead of 10-0, and that was a game to me. So I gave them an F.
All right, now let's move on to the coaching. And how do you lose to an organization that does not want to win? The Jets somehow found the way, and Adam Gase again had no answers after the first drive. The Dolphins' defense has just been horrendous this season. But you would not know it on Sunday. You wouldn't have known that. All right, Greg Williams got beaten up by Ryan Fitzpatrick again. I can kind of give him a pass, man, Mike, because of the talent he had on the defensive side of the ball. You know, you can't go out there and you can't make plays. You can only put players in position to make plays. I think Greg Williams is an excellent defensive coach. Okay, again, he can only put the players in the best possible position to make the plays, and they're just not making plays. Not making plays at all. All right, so I'm going to give a grade of G-T-F-O-H. Get the bleep out of here. That's my grade for the coaching staff. Time for Adam Gase to go. Greg Williams can stay. Time for Adam Gase to go. Keep Greg Williams. Get rid of everybody else. Go ahead, Mad Mike.
I was thinking the same thing. I think that Gase has to go. I think that one thing that I think the Jets overlooked was perception. I think that when you got to be cognizant of perception, and he already feels like he's lost. Jamal Adams. He feels like he's lost some of the other guys in the locker room. And for me personally, he's not showing enough. If you're going to be a guy that makes enemies in your locker room with your players, as been the case with him in Miami, you got to be a coach that wins. You got to be a coach that can prove, like Bill Belichick says, I don't need you. You need me. It's my system. It's not you. I can show you by trading you. You know, by trading a Jamie Collins to Cook.
Yeah, that's you know, I big ups to Greg Williams. He's done an excellent job. And that was the reason why I thought that this team was going to make the playoffs. We've seen they've lost Matt Mike, listeners. He's having some technical difficulties over there. So hopefully we'll get him back real soon. But, you there? You there? You back, Matt Mike?
Damn it. Damn it.
I hear you now, Matt Mike. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying, to speak on to that. Greg Williams seems like a guy who gets the most out of his teams, and he doesn't necessarily have to coach his defense. He proved that last year in Cleveland. So what I would do is I would, honest to God, if I'm trying to save my locker room, there's no saving this season, but if I'm trying to save this locker room, and if I'm Joe Douglas, who's still trying to prove himself to these players, that he knows what he's doing, he's going to scout and bring in the right guys, I'd fire Adam Gase tomorrow. And I'd say I'm on the verge of having a meltdown in this locker room. And one guy I know that is that, you know, just that kind of motivator, just that kind of person, that infectious personality, is Greg Williams. I promote him to head coach. He's under contract for the next 3 years. I promote him to head coach. I let him, you know, his son is on the roster. The one thing he did is he hired a lot of his own defensive staff, and I let him handle it. Or I'd promote the other guy, I forget his name, the linebackers coach. I'd promote him to defensive coordinator.
You know,
and I'd move on right now.
The reason why I said that I felt that the Jets were going to make the playoffs, listeners and Mad Mike, was because of Greg Williams. It's because of Greg Williams and the way he had this defense playing. In those games that the Jets were losing the first half of the season, it wasn't because of the defense. It was because of the offense. And I'll stick by my word that if Sam Darnold wouldn't have gotten mononucleosis, that the Jets would be, right at this particular point in time, they would be in a better situation than they are right now. They would be. I feel that way.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I don't know the reason why.
The offense wasn't putting up points because of Luke Falk. I feel Sam Darnold would have done better than Luke. We all know Sam Darnold would have done better than Luke Falk.
Do we? Because he's been back for 3 weeks. And he's been back for 4 weeks, actually. He's played exactly 4 games. And he's got 8 interceptions in the last 3. So, no, I don't know. I don't know he'd be better. I don't know if this coach is helping him. I don't know if this system is a very good system. I don't know if it's helping him. We could sit here and say whatever the hell we want. I don't know what Adam Gase is. I don't know what he is as an offensive coordinator. And I don't know what he is as a head coach. No. I'll take that back. I know what he is as a head coach, and it hasn't been good. And 25 of his, I don't know what they said. I think he was 23-24 coming in as a Jet coach, and he's now 20.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, we both agree that it's time for him to go. I don't necessarily know. We lost Mad Mike again, listeners. I don't necessarily know if Adam Gase is going to be around next season, or if he's going to be gone next season.
Yo, can you hear me?
We can hear you now, Mad Mike. We got you back.
I don't know what's going on with my service today, but
yeah,
anyway, like I said.
Yeah, so we'll see. And that, before we close the show out and get to Mad Mike's rant, I've been looking forward to hitting Mad Mike with this, okay? As we all know, Steven Strasburg of the Washington Nationals, he's opted out of his contract. Where he's leaving $100 million on the table, Mad Mike. And he's becoming a free agent. I've said on this show, you said on this show, that we feel that the Yankees need starting pitching and that the Yankees should at least go out and sign 2 of the 3 top free agent pitchers out on the market this year. It would go to what the starters say this year about we don't need no pitching. It would go if Cashman says we don't need no starting pitching. This team needs starting pitching. Okay, with that being said, Mad Mike, Hal Steinbrenner recently told the New York Post that he was willing to consider handing out a deal worth over $200 million this season. Haven't we heard this before? Haven't we heard where this organization, where the brass has promised us that they were going to spend money and didn't do a damn thing? We're hearing it again, listeners. Mad Mike, we're hearing it again. With a head honcho said, "Oh, I'm willing to spend money, the Yankee fans. We was willing to spend money last year, Yankee fans. Didn't do it." My thing is, I can't allow you to pull the wool over my eyes again. What's that saying? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. You gotta prove it. And I think now Hal Steinbrenner is spewing hot caca out of his mouth. Your thoughts, Mad Mike?
Who, when he said this $200 million contract, what was he referring to? Because I think we're past the days, unless he was talking about a pitcher, because I think we're past the days of $200 million contracts for guys that matter. This team has, listen. Here's what's going to happen.
Hold on, Mad Mike. I also want to point out, I'm sorry, before I let you go, just to give you some more food for your thought, that Hal Steinbrenner also said that if the season was to start tomorrow, he would feel considerably more confident than he did a year ago at this time. He also said that we have both Severino and Montgomery, Jordan Montgomery. We know that we have Domingo Germán. that he can pitch effectively at this level. And we know James Paxton could be the guy that we were hoping for when we made the trade. We have Masahiro Tanaka, we have J.A. Happ, Jonathan Loaisiga, and perhaps Davi Garcia at some point, a very good rotation. That is complete bull bleep. Go ahead, Mike.
One, honestly, David Garcia is going. I'm telling you right now, if Lindor ends up with the Dodgers, Davy Garcia better be going to the Dodgers for Corey Seager. That's number one. So he shouldn't even be counted in anybody's plans for next year's rotation because Davy Garcia shouldn't be in anywhere close to this rotation. It's time for them to put the money where their mouth is. This team needs two starting pitchers. And I'm going to tell you why this team needs two starting pitchers. Because they got James Paxton, they got Masahiro Tanaka, they got Luis Severino. And to me, that's all they got. And here's why I'm going to tell you that. Because that's all they were willing to start in the playoffs. Correct? Correct?
Yes.
They started those three in the playoffs, and they went to bullpen games, right? So that tells me you only believe you have three starters. Save the BS, the nonsense for somebody else that wasn't, you know, that was born yesterday, basically, right? Because in my opinion, if you only had three starters you were trusting in the playoffs, you only have three starters on your rotation. Everybody else is going to help you get those wins, but none of them is going to pitch when it matters. Steven Strasburg, Gerrit Cole, Madison Bumgarner. Two out of the three of those guys should be Yankees next year, and that's just it, in my opinion. Mike,
I throw Will into the mix, but you got to get Gerrit Cole or Strasburg. Got to. Because why? Strasburg proving that he could beat the team that has knocked you out of the playoffs in back-to-back years.
I agree with you. But here's the thing. To me, it's got to be both. To me, it's got to be both. One, because if you land Cole, they get weaker. And if you get Strasburg, like you just said, you get a guy that beat that team twice in the World Series. Agree.
And in a perfect world, in the George Steinbrenner days, that's exactly who the Yankees would get at all costs. That's exactly what they would do. But now we're talking about how Steinbrenner, who feeds us all this bull, I want to curse so bad, but I'm refraining, and Cashman, who also feeds us all this bull. This team has the money. Has the money. Who gives a sugar honey iced tea if they shell out X amount of money to get both those dudes? Who cares? This team hit over 300 home runs during the regular season, and what in the hell did that get them in the playoffs?
When MLB switched back to the regular balls, too.
Let them know. Talk to them. Give it to them. Give them the real.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't know how it's got to stop.
This buffoonery, like, Hal Steinbrenner, stop with it. And then you name Jordan Montgomery? Jordan Montgomery, man, Mike? What in the hell has Jordan Montgomery done for us to feel comfortable as Yankee fans as him being a starting pitcher in this rotation?
What Jordan Montgomery did? Jordan Montgomery had a solid season for a number five starter. That's exactly what Jordan Montgomery had. He had a solid season for a number five starter 2 years ago, but he blew out his elbow, or 3 years ago. Then 2 years ago, he blew out his elbow, and he spent this entire year this year rehabbing it. We don't know. Well, one thing that we do know about Jordan Montgomery, he had really average to below average control of his pitches. And what is the last thing, if it ever comes back, what is the last thing to come back after Tommy John surgery? Your location. So we don't know what he is. We just don't. And the fact that they're even counting him in, it just shows you how irresponsible this front office has become under this ownership. And if the message coming from the owner, it's showing us how irresponsible this owner is. No team wins. Listen. Your farm system is your lifeblood if you're a small market team. No big market team is building their entire championship roster through the draft, through the farm system. Go look at it. Chris Sale is not from the farm. David Price is not from the farm. Rick Porcello was not from the farm. JD Martinez was not from the farm. Gerrit Cole is not from the farm. Justin Verlander, not from the farm. Zach Greinke, not from the farm. Do we need to keep going? Michael Brantley, not from the farm. You got to be able to. You got to be able and willing to spend money. You build a championship core through the farm, one that you know can get you to the next level, and then you spend money to get to the next level. Let's talk about the '90s Yankees that me and you love. David Wells wasn't from the farm. Jimmy Key wasn't from the farm. David Cone wasn't from the farm. Roger Clemens wasn't from the farm. El Duque wasn't from the farm. You want me to keep going?
Yeah. And just think about this also. If the Yankees somehow, which we know is not going to happen, if they do go out and sign Strasburg and Gerrit Cole, you go into a playoff series, okay, with Gerrit Cole, Strasburg, Masahiro Tanaka, who's by far been the Yankees' best playoff pitcher. Then that automatically moves... And Severino, then that automatically moves Severino or James Paxton to the bullpen. Or you can go Strasburg, Cole, Masahiro Tanaka, Severino, and that bumps James Paxton to the bullpen. Are the Yankees not a better team with that scenario happening? Are you kidding me? Did the Nationals not bring in the Nationals against?
Corbin.
Did they not bring Corbin in that deciding game, and he came in and shut the Astros down?
Gave him four innings. They right, and that was the thing. They said, Max, give us everything. I empty the tank. We're gonna ride with you. And then they went to Corbin and said, Corbin, give me three innings.
And Max got me. Pitcher. So imagine the Yankees being in that same scenario where they go their 5-man rotation the entire season, and a 5-man rotation would be Gerrit Cole, Strasburg, Masahiro Tanaka, Luis Severino, and James Paxton. Does that not become one of the best starting five rotations in Major League Baseball? And then if you go into the playoffs and you bump it down to a 4-man rotation, because like you said, the Yankees went 3 and used the bullpen for the fourth, that automatically eliminates you burning your bullpen out, which the Yankees always seem to do. And then that pushes Paxton to be that player that could come in and be a starter to close out an important game. Come on.
Yeah, or yeah, like you said, or Paxton can just be the guy. Like, hey, if one of our starters have an off night where we got to pull him second or third inning, we can, and Paxton can give us the other 3 or 4 innings. If he's effective, maybe 5, and all of a sudden, I had a really bad day for a starter, but I didn't burn my bullpen in the process because of it. There's just a lot of options, man. There just are, and it seems like this team, this front office, this ownership is deaf to the fact.
Yeah, listen, and okay. Unbelievable, man. But let's hope. I'm not even going to get myself set up for that, Mad Mike and listeners, because we know the Yankees aren't going to do this. They're already making excuses as is. After he said he doesn't mind selling out $200 million, they're already making excuses. Already. Think about what I just said. Already making excuses by naming Joel Montgomery and the rest of the. Already.
Yeah, but once again, and this is what I said about, you know, players have short memories. Players, they really do. They listen. You don't think that Gerrit Cole hears that and he's like, these guys still haven't learned their lesson? And you don't think he finds that insulting? That you're talking about the pursuit of me in the same context that you're talking about Domingo Herman and David Garcia, who we've never even seen pitch, and Jordan Montgomery? I'd be insulted.
Yeah. Boy. Well, anyway, let's move on to a more important thing, which is Mad Mike's rant for the week, where he gives us the lowdown on what's really irking him in this week of sports. Mad Mike, what do you got for your rant this week? Lay it on us.
Man, Lloyd, I'm so sick and tired of officiating in all sports. I am so sick of it, man. Tell me that you didn't watch the World Series and how bad that strike zone is, and you have it. We watched it the entire Yankee series. We watched it in the World Series. You saw when they called Trey Turner out in Game 6 for running out of the baseline, saying he never reestablished himself, and Joe Torre having to look like a fool and defend his umpires when this kid was right. He's a lefty. his swing naturally takes him out of the baseline with the kid speed. He reestablished himself, and they threw him out. It should have been second and third and nobody out, and that could have really changed. Do you realize that the Washington Nationals
We lost Matt Mike again. This is a rough go for Matt Mike with his reception on the show this week. So, we got you. We got you back. Yeah, Matt Mike, we got you.
No, I was just saying that we were almost robbed. It was second and third, and they ended up first, one out and the man on first. They could have lost the World Series. The World Series champions could have lost the World Series based on that call in Game 6, and the world would have been cheated out of an amazing run for this team. It's disgusting. In the New York Jet game, there was an offensive pass interference call where they said that Robbie Anderson blocked before the ball was released. Here's the thing about the NFL. Offensive players are allowed to block within 1 yard of the line of scrimmage. He was within one yard of the line of scrimmage. Adam Gase actually challenged it. It was actually his first challenge. And for some reason, they withheld it. Dean Blandino was on the air saying, I don't understand what they're doing. This just has to be something from New York where they're saying, I don't care. Don't overturn any pass interference call. Not only that, but then you get the story comes out that the league actually sent a memo to all the teams and said they don't want any public criticisms of the pass interference replay rule. So do you want to fix the problem or not? What's going on? Officiating has become so bad across all the sports. It's annoying. It's sickening. And it's really turning me off to the sport. You want to say steroids and concussions, all these other things that are going to kill the sports, going to kill our sports? No. How about umpires and referees and NBA guys who are falling? I haven't even gotten into the NBA. I don't even know if I have enough time in my rant to get into the NBA.
Traveling going on in the NBA. Dudes taking five steps and not being called.
Exactly. All the traveling that's not getting called. All the Euro steps. All the step backs. All the fake freaking guys who are losing the ball and then just throwing themselves on the floor. LeBron James actually caused a flagrant two by faking. Literally caused a flagrant two by faking. They what are we doing? What are we doing? I'm so over it. They have to be better. They have to be better. And I don't know how they're going to fix it, but we said after the Saints game last year against the Rams, officiating was going to have to improve. There was no way around it. Officiating has gotten worse in the NFL. So all that has gotten worse.
There you have it, listeners. Mad Mike's rant for the week, and it's a great rant, and I feel I have the same sentiments when it comes to officiating in sports at this particular moment right now. But with that being said, that's going to bring us to a close of this week's show. Me and Mad Mike, as always, would like to thank you for chiming in and sticking with us. Please spread the news to your friends that are big sports fans. Let's keep this wildfire going. We want to thank our producer, Ayo Omar Baker, for keeping this thing going as well. So listeners, please have a safe and blessed week. And me and Mad Mike can see you in 7 days. So, Ayo, let's vote. Also, I know Ayo is a big Knicks fan, so I'm curious to see, you know, his thoughts on that. But, hey, yo, let's roll, baby.
Man, listen. Yesterday, the New York Knicks lost 113-92 to the Sacramento Kings, who have also been absolutely trashed this year. Like, I was watching a lot of the Brooklyn Nets basketball last season and the season before that, and I thought the Knicks were going to be similar to the team that we saw 2 years ago in Brooklyn, where you got a bunch of young pieces, young players that are learning to play together, that are coming up, that are developing, and you can see potential, and you can see some improvement, and you can see progress in the way that the team looks. And they completely checked out last night. So like you guys said, it's definitely not the actual players on the roster, because I think they have a lot of great pieces. Obviously, RJ Barrett is, you know, at the forefront of a lot of those great pieces that the Knicks have. I don't know what the hell is going on as far as decisions that are being made with the personnel being put onto the court night by night. There's no chemistry. They just definitely didn't show up to play last night. But whatever, another loss. The Knicks so far this season are 1-6. Doesn't look like they're going to come anywhere near making the playoffs like you predicted, Lloyd, earlier this year. So I don't know. But anyway, appreciate all the listeners tuning in. It's the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show, part of my Fresh Sports. Make sure you follow at Lloyd A. Thompson, that's two L's, Instagram, Twitter, and follow PMF Sports, Instagram and Twitter. LloydAThompson.com, part of myfresh.com. The podcast drops every Monday, so make sure you subscribe everywhere the podcasts are available. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all of the above. And any questions you have, send them on over to chop it up with y'all on a future episode of the show to make sure those questions are answered. Once again, Lloyd A. Thompson, Mad Mike Sports Show, part of My Fresh Sports. Tell a friend to tell a friend. We'll catch y'all in 7 days. Hopefully the Knicks catch at least one win this week. I mean, damn. Peace.